Tonight's talk is called Wise Listening and Then. And it's about the whole 360 degrees of communicating. It's really more than 360, it's, you know, three-dimensional too. Before I launch any further into the topic, I just want to be clear that when I say speaking or listening or any of their synonyms, these words are meant to include or at least imply that it's any method that's used to deliver or receive messages, such as signing, gesturing, writing, facial expressions, the occasional nod or shake of the head. And sometimes these various methods of communicating are used in combination, and sometimes to nefarious means. For example, all of your words can be kind and understanding and supportive, then you roll your eyes. It's not wise speech anymore. That kind of universally understood facial expression of sarcasm undercuts whatever your words have said. And it can be true with body language or tone of voice also. So taking in the communication from another person and then responding can be a very complicated thing. So please bear that in mind when I use these very simple terms of speaking and listening. At the beginning, I want to also point out that there's an underlying principle in all of the Eightfold Path or the precepts, and that is usually phrased by the Buddha as non-harming. In other words, we want to go through our lives in such a manner that we're not increasing the dukkha or dissatisfaction or suffering that other beings, well, including yourself, are experiencing. I like to put this in the positive framework and say kindness, caring about the happiness of all beings. So the kindness of communication is emphasized by the fact that it's one of the very first five precepts, the precepts that are usually taken by lay people. And it's also one fold of the Eightfold Path, focusing on wise communication. And as an example of how important it is, I want to read a verse from the Tathagata, which is a poem describing a reclusive arahant, someone who kept to himself after being fully enlightened. And it said of this monk, he has become calm and at rest, wise in speech, and not self-centered. He has plucked off unwholesome states, like wind would leaves from a tree. So in other words, wise or non-harming or kind communication is a pretty good way for us to monitor our own spiritual health. If we've just totally ripped somebody apart, then we can pretty much assume that maybe we should meditate. Maybe we should reconsider whether or not we're harming or being kind. Now, the title of the talk is Wise Listening, and I'd like to start there with, again, some initial comments. And one is that it's always situational. Where are you? Are you at work? Are you at the door when some stranger has rung your bell? Have you been stopped on the street by someone who asks you a question? Someone you've never seen before? Or what's going on? Is it just a party where people are calling out witticisms? All of the situations will have a different way that you engage. And in fact, there are times, I wanted to put this preface right at the beginning, because under helpful habits, I have put letting them talk. And you don't necessarily want to do that with someone who's called on the telephone and immediately goes into a spiel about how you should give them money. There's no obligation, really, to engage in this unsolicited communication. So the question becomes, not just do I want to talk, but are there kind ways to not listen? And I've written it out. I've memorized it. Excuse me, but I have an across-the-board policy never to give or pledge money over the phone or at the door. Have a nice day. And then if I've got the presence of mind, I'll say, would you please put me on your do not call list? And that's that. It's been working for me, and I don't have to get angry, and I don't have to regret what I've said. So I will go on then to discuss some of the helpful habits that we can have when listening. And they may look passive. I mean, you know, you're sitting or you're standing there and your face may be even blank. But the first one is this letting them talk. That is a simple exercise, simple, in patience. Sometimes it can be a very difficult exercise in patience. Again, it's situational. There are times when you're at a party and you can see that someone is monopolizing the conversation and you just sort of go off to get your drink refilled. And there's no unkindness. There's probably no offense given in your acting on your impatience. But if you've agreed to connect with someone and it, you know, it's usually nonverbal. You're engaged with someone you know. They're talking. Do you interrupt? Do you go off into some fantasy? Or do you stay and continue to listen? And I've added another helpful habit, and this is by no means a complete list. These are just the things that I was able to think of. But it's actually paying attention, not just staying there and being the wall that they aim their words at, but you're giving attention to what they're communicating. You're focusing. You're trying to understand. And then you're doing this with respect. This is the third habit. And this is a kind of open-heartedness. You're assuming the best of them, that they and or their message is something worth listening to. And you're accepting the content, not just the fact that they're talking, the words are coming at you, but that they have the right to say this. And you're accepting the fact that they've said it. Now, anyone who has discussed politics with someone they don't agree with in the past 6 months, you know that accepting that they've said this can often be similar to accepting that something dreadful has happened in the world. And it doesn't mean that you have to like it, but that you acknowledge it as a fact. This person has said this thing, and here I am, I've received this message. And it can be difficult. This is where we start getting into our own dukkha. And very often it's so powerful. You remember that verse about self-absorption. That's all we're feeling. But the revolution in communication that's offered by the Dharma is that we can hear their dukkha. We can hear their suffering. Why are they saying this? What's revealed by their facial expression, by their body language, by the way they're expressing it, that helps you understand where they're coming from? And when you see the suffering behind the message, it puts you on a different emotional level. What the other person has said is less threatening to me if I can open my heart to their suffering. Mind you, I said if, you know, I'm not claiming to be perfect in any of this, but it enables me to respond without taking what they said personally, and to be kind, to acknowledge their right to be who they are and think what they think. So focusing on their suffering sidesteps a key danger in unwise speech by not perpetuating the dukkha that they come into the conversation with. You're not meeting this force with an opposite and equal force. You're sidestepping it, letting it go past. And I'll share with you one of the scariest moments of my life back in the 80s when I was still very much in the closet because it wasn't really safe to be out as a lesbian. And I was going into a high school classroom as part of the Pacific Center Speakers Bureau for the express purpose of talking to them about what it's like to be gay, on the assumption that people are less homophobic if they actually know someone who's gay. And I was terrified, afraid of the things that they might say or do to me. And I looked around and I realized I was in a high school classroom. And I remembered being in a high school classroom. And I knew that these kids were suffering. They were suffering just as they sat there. And heaven knows what my communication was going to put them through. And all of a sudden, my attention shifted from myself and my suffering to theirs. And I lost all of my nervousness. And that's kind of been the beginning of every time I speak in public, that's a shift that I try to make in my understanding of the audience. So what I was doing then was the first on my, or what I had been doing, was the first on my list of not so helpful habits with listening. And that was focusing on what I'm going to say instead of listening to the speaker. I'm all wrapped up with, how do I deal with this? What's going to be my part in this communication? And it's just simply recognizing that this communication is not all about me. There are two people in it, at least. And it left me open to asking, what is our connection here all about? What's coming from the other side? Another not so helpful habit is judging their message. Like, comes up in the mind, that's a stupid thing to say. Why on earth did they go there? Or, it's just not right. That's factually incorrect. Or, well, that just goes to show that they're defective somehow as a human being, or they wouldn't have said that. This is a common problem that I very often judge style. If a conversation kind of meanders or gets repetitious, or if it's incoherent, or if they're misusing terms. You know, I was an English major. I was a lawyer. I still, you know, it's like I want to correct. And another not so helpful habit is kind of related to what I said before, psychoanalyzing them, judging them. That, well, there's more neurotic talk coming out of this maladjusted person. Just goes to show my opinion of them was right. So when we have all of this stuff that accompanies the words or nonverbal communication from someone else, that's the condition that our minds and hearts are going to be in when the mouth goes open, or when we initialize our communication in reply. That's where we're going to be coming from. So this is why wise listening is so important. Because how can we expect ourselves to follow all of the guidelines for wise speech with all of this inside of us? And I want to issue a disclaimer that wise speech is not always pretty. Sometimes what we have to say needs to be direct. It needs to be clear and, you know, not at all fluffy or warm. In the Hymn to the Buddha, which is a long poem by Matrasita, a poet who lived after the Buddha's death, Matrasita prays the Buddha's various qualities, and he had this to say about how the Buddha perfected wise speech. In verse number 69, it's, generally your speech was wholly sweet, but when necessary, it would be otherwise. But either way, every word was well spoken, because it always achieved its purpose. Verse 77, these words go to the hearts of all. While comforting the grieving, they alarm the heedless and rouse those preoccupied with pleasures. I like that last part because it compares being preoccupied with getting what you want to being asleep. It arouses you out of slumber. This kind of wise speech is kind of an advanced form, and I've seen and heard a lot of teachers use it. I hesitate. In the Community Dharma Leader program, the first day there, we were told that one of the main themes was going to be diversity. And someone who became a friend and who I respect a lot has become very well known as a writer complained he didn't want to have to deal with issues of diversity. He said it just wasn't fair because he wasn't a racist. And I said, well, you are a white person who thinks you're not a racist, but that's not really unfair when compared to the unfairness that people of other backgrounds have faced historically. So I said, suck it up. And he told me later that that just woke him right up. So I probably wouldn't have done it if it weren't someone who was training to be a teacher. But I figured it was a pretty good risk with this guy. There are some common tendencies that people have in replying to what other people have said. And again, as an ex-lawyer, or a recovering lawyer, I go for what's called the call of the question. And that is specifically, what is their message asking for me to talk about? And needless to say, I often miss the point because they don't really want me to say anything. They just want to emote. They want me to hear and care. And another that I think is really pretty common among all of us is to sort of free associate. What was it that they said that interested me? And that's what we start talking about. This is pretty much party communication. Oh yeah, I saw a show that, or there's a show coming up that's kind of like that. One style is kind of always asking, what's in this for me? How can I manipulate this person or this situation, given what I've just heard? And this is really common with the college kids that I taught. Whether or not I agree with what I heard you say, that it's all about my opinions. Now there's an antidote for all of our troubles in listening and speaking. And that goes back to the basic principle that I mentioned at the beginning, which is kindness, not harming. And this antidote is compassion. It extends from listening with compassion to the way we speak. If we stay in that place of being aware of their suffering, and ours too, we don't have to ignore ours. That's what mindfulness is. It takes it all in. Then what we say is most likely going to follow the guidelines that are in the precept of wise speech. Is it truthful, kind, helpful, and appropriate? And truthful means, to the best of my knowledge, it's not an alternative fact. And I have not been given a divine revelation to know things that no one can be expected to know. But to the best of my knowledge, this is not a lie. Is it kind? Is my intention in saying this to benefit them, as opposed to letting them know how angry I am or whatever? And is it helpful? In what I say, is there a value to the previous speaker or to others in general? The hymn to the Buddha in verse 75 says that the Buddha's speech is excellent in three ways. Based on fact, it is truthful. Because its motive is pure, it causes no confusion. And being relevant, it is easily understood. Now, the fourth guideline is often split into five or six or whatever total guidelines. It very often it's said to be timely, or I like to bunch all of these variations under the word appropriate. So it's considering how they're going to hear what I say. From all of the clues that I had about their suffering or other state of mind, how are my words going to land in their ears? Are they too upset even to hear what I'm trying to say? And here's the timeliness business. Should I wait to say anything until something else happens, we know more, or they cool off, or whatever? Or if I don't say it now, will later be too late? And I'd like to end with a final verse from the hymn to the Buddha. Because you never speak at the wrong time, or in the wrong place, or toward the wrong person, your words, like energy rightly applied, are never wasted. Thank you.